Hello and welcome back. With me now is Joe Belfiore, who are fresh off of the Tech Ed stage. How was it?
It was good. The demos generally worked, and so that makes me happy.
Excellent. So just for those people that maybe didn't catch the whole keynote, what kind of things were you talking about? What was the overall kind of end-to-end theme of your part of the keynote?
What we were really trying to talk about today was some of the key things in Windows 10 that are for enterprise.
Yeah.
And really, there's four main messages. The first is we're building one platform that goes across a wide range of devices, so your work is leveraged. Second, we're going to have a user experience that people are going to love. End users on PCs or phones or tablets or two-in-ones are going to be thrilled and want to use Windows 10. And then for sort of the IT management types in the audience, third, we're doing a ton of work to help you protect your corporate data and improve the security of the system. And then fourth, we're going to make it incredibly easy to manage and deploy so you can get Windows 10 out to people and maintain Windows 10 once it's part of your organization.
It's a really interesting thing. As we start to explain the way that Windows 10 works to people, they really start to see a few different things. They start off with the UI, we start to have the IT pro conversation, and we go down to data protection. Those kind of areas start to really kind of light people's faces up. It's pretty cool as we start going through that. But one of the things, the first things that you mentioned, I think it's, for me, it's one of those things that we really have to, I think, explain a bit more for IT guys, is why does it really matter that we have a common core in Windows?
Well, the common core really provides a whole bunch of benefits, you know, some of which are specific to IT guys, but many of which are just broad in the ecosystem. The idea is that there's technology that underlies a tailored user experience. So as you work your way from the bottom of the operating system up, think of device drivers that are the same. And so if you're a hardware vendor creating a new graphics part, you can write a driver once that targets, you know, phones or tablets or PCs to even bigger devices. The networking stack is the same. So when we deal with things like security issues, we can fix them once, and it's code that goes on all those devices. And then moving up the stack, things like the software development platform. If you're a developer and you learn the APIs, they work across the widest range of devices.
And I guess when we start to see the developers building applications that work across a really wide range of devices, that starts to become good for enterprises because I guess it's less to deploy, less to think about from an app point of view.
Yeah, actually, I think for enterprises, I would say two things. One is that as you write your own apps, you can learn the platform, which is then translatable to a wide range of devices. And so you can think about how you use IoT-type sensors to give you business data that you manage in the cloud. You could think about phones. You can think about tablets, dedicated devices that maybe some of your employees will use, all the way up to screens in your conference rooms. So as a line of business developer, you can learn these APIs and then deploy a really wide range of solutions that make sense for your business. The second thing is that as we do this, the theory is that we'll get a lot of ISVs on board writing a bunch of apps as well. And then as an IT manager, you have a wider range of apps available in the store that you can license and deploy to your users as well.
Yeah, so let's just very quickly talk about the universal apps and where they kind of start to fit into the ecosystem. We can start to take an app and then move it from device to device, and that, I guess, forms part of somebody's mobility because they start to use multiple devices, they start to move between them as well as just taking their device with them, which is a fantastic position to be in. But we also have that ability to now be able to do things with the public store around applications specifically for enterprises as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a number of the things that we announced there, the store is getting a lot of work. It's one of the places we've heard a lot of feedback from people on Windows 8. IT managers looking for example, a sign-in type that they can manage. And so one of the things we'll do in Windows 10 is enable Azure Active Directory sign-in. So as an IT manager, you can provision an Azure Active Directory account. And then the store can work against that AAD account. So that means you can curate the apps in the store for particular users in your organization. You can deploy your line of business apps there. You can do deals with ISVs and do volume licensing and manage the licenses of individual apps for users in your organization. It should be much more flexible, and all of the infrastructure that we're building to make that store service work for broad end users around the world will be available for you as IT managers to work within your organization.
Yeah, it's very interesting that we make those centralized investments in the store. And it means that there's a little bit less work there for IT guys to actually
have
to do in their own shop.
Exactly,
it's a really great place to be. And that's one of the advantages of moving towards this more modern ecosystem. We start to actually make it easier for people, which I think is a fantastic place to be in. During the keynote, you showed off one or two little features inside of things like the command prompt.
Yeah.
And I think we were upstairs in one of the rooms upstairs, and everyone was going, why isn't he showing PowerShell instead? Because we've been having that conversation for a while. But it's the same, it's the command interface. And some of the features in there were pretty cool. I mean, things like the ability to be able to do copy and paste. It got a round of applause.
It's funny, the way we use a process internally to build Windows 10, we have a pretty large team, and the leadership team gets together with the people running individual parts of the group, and we do these director reviews. And there was a director review for the developer platform group, and they showed a video of a bunch of the work they had built into the product, and their video showed the copy-paste and the keyboard shortcuts in the command prompt, and we all had the same reaction that the audience did. We're like, wow, that's great! And so that's why it made its way into these talks, because it just connects with people. You know, I think that although there are other alternatives you can get, when an install of Windows has things that are set as the default in a way that your muscle memory is just delighted, then it connects for people, and it did for us, and that's why we're talking about something that is, you know, seemingly as trivial as that when we talk about Windows 10. It's a big part of the philosophy of the release, trying to find the things that will satisfy and delight an incredibly broad range of users.
How does understanding what is going to satisfy and delight actually come to light inside of the company? How do we... Is there anything that we actually do to get this feedback from people?
There's a ton of things. Mm. I mean, I think a big part of it is starting with ourselves as users. Mm. We have the benefit that with Windows 10, we're targeting this range of devices from, you know, ordinary laptops to tablets to phones, and all of us use those devices ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to create a development process where we can all self-host it, and then we can make that publicly available outside of Microsoft as well. And so, you know, it starts with thinking about how to build products that we will all love, and then getting all of our partners and audiences involved in the development process, so we hear from them as we go along. Of course, we do things like focus groups and usability studies, and we've gone to people's homes to test the upgrade and let them live with the product. And, you know, we're trying to make sure that we have a great, rich feedback pipeline that we're paying a lot of attention to as we develop the product, and so the results in the end will be something that everybody will be happy with.
I got to admit, you showed one of my favorite features today, which is the new... the ability to snap to the center of the screen. That's one of those things which I use two monitors on my desktop every single day. And it's one of those features which I've been wanting for, well, ever since we introduced Snap. And it's finally there. And I'm really happy about that.
It's one of those things I use. You know, it really, I'm always happy to see people connect emotionally with the kinds of features that you build when they can sort of imagine the muscle feeling they have today and it being unsatisfied, and then you go fix some of these problems, and then, you know, people get pretty enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, and it's amazing how that kind of thing actually makes everything more familiar inside of the interface that you're using. It all starts to just become more natural for everybody to be able to use the operating
system. That's what we're going for.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. You talked about the data protection features as well. Can you take us through how data protection works a little bit inside of Windows again?
Sure. This is an area that we're actually investing a lot of energy in. Actually, I would encourage everybody, if you get a chance, to go watch the keynote, because I did a UI walkthrough where you can sort of see what the UI might be like. But a quick overview is that we're trying to understand the needs that companies have and the needs that end users have and find the right sweet spot in how those overlap. Today, there are a few facts. One is that in some cases, companies are buying PCs or phones or tablets and giving them to employees, and then they expect to be able to manage them. But in a lot of those situations, the human employees want to be able to use those devices for personal stuff too, or they just won't use them. So that's sort of one case, the BYOD case. Second case is, in a lot of situations, companies are buying devices. So what we've done is we've built an architecture where, as an IT manager, you can set policy on which apps you authorize to have access to company data. And when you authorize an app, that data will be encrypted on the device, and apps that you don't authorize can't get the data. And we enforce this as part of the operating system itself. And so the thing that I showed in the walkthrough, which I'd encourage you all to see, is a simple case like copy and paste. If you imagine a scenario where a company has bought a PC, they've authorized Word, Excel, the Office Suite, maybe some additional third-party apps, because it's built into the platform, mm-hmm. to access company data, then when that user runs those apps, by default, data is company data. It's by default encrypted. The user doesn't have to go into a separate special environment like Knox on Android, for example, requires users to go manage that thing themselves. By default, that data is protected, and if the user tries to paste it into another app, it just won't work. Mm-hmm. And you can set policy that manages, maybe you want to allow paste but audit it. And so the benefit we're trying to create is an experience that's simple for end users, that does the right thing by default, but puts IT in the position of setting whatever policy makes sense for all those varied users in their organization. And so the net result is that data is actually more protected.
And it's one of those things, the risk of data leakage is something that every IT professional I've ever come across has to actually manage. They have to have some kind of responsibility around that. When I used to manage desktops, that's one of the things that I had to think about. What are the possible ways people are going to take that data out?
Yeah.
And it's awesome that we have
And
that
the tricky
kind of thing
is, if you don't make it usable, and the default within the experiences that people are already accustomed to, then they'll go run something else.
Yes.
And then you fail to actually protect the data. So the thing we're going for is that balance. And we're collaborating with the Office team. We're collaborating with our own teams building management software and third-party management software companies so that the solution will work by default and be easy.
And it does need to be something which is almost invisible to the end user. Because if you actually rely on them to do their own data protection, it's easier not to.
That's right.
And that's kind of where people end up going. So you also mentioned something that I know is also very true to most of our hearts that have ever managed desktops, group policy. You mentioned a little bit about group policy. You also mentioned MDM in almost the same breath.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about MDM
sure.
and group policy?
What we're trying to do in Windows 10, and here's another case where you think about a core operating system that's shared among a bunch of different devices. Today, many companies are using group policy to manage PCs, and companies are using MDM systems that they're getting from a wide range of vendors to manage their diverse population of phones and tablets and so on. Well, with Windows 10, we want to make sure that all of our customers can have the flexibility to pick the system that makes sense for them. So we're going to continue to have terrific group policy support for PCs, as you'd expect, but we're also going to enable MDM systems to manage PCs as well. So if you have an MDM system that you like and you're managing phones and tablets, whether they're ours or Apple or Google, whatever, you can use that MDM system and now manage your PCs as well as part of that. The point is, it's up to you to decide, and we're going to put capabilities into Windows 10 that give you the freedom of choice to pick the system that works best for you.
Yeah, that level of flexibility, and I guess also that's another place where the familiarity of what you already know as an IT guy starts to come in. We've got this interesting situation at the moment where lots of IT guys out there they know how group policy works. That's their familiar management tool. We've also got this other situation, which is guys that just focus purely on mobility, their familiar management is MDM. So it's kind of cool that we're able to support both in seamless way. You took us through multi-factor authentication as well in the demo. Any thoughts around why that's the important thing that it is to kind of move us around multi-factor auth?
Yeah, actually, I think the situation here is pretty similar to the situation with protecting data. Mm-hmm. There's this problem today where generally people use passwords to have the secret that enables them to get access to all their stuff and to company resources. And the problem with passwords, of course, is that as an end user, you have a lot of these to keep track of. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you write them down or you use the same one over and over again.
Yep.
And then all of those mechanisms tend to store that secret in servers, which are then susceptible to attack via social engineering of end users, via attack of the corporate data system and so on. So what we're trying to do in Windows 10 is build into the operating system a more complete and flexible authentication system. So as an IT manager, you can pick a method that better balances usability and protection. And so there's a range of things here. One is we're going to enable biometric support as a core part of the OS sign-in. So if you want to deploy devices that require fingerprint sign-on, you can. And that's obviously a way that's very secure and modern. Yep. And the thing that I showed during the keynote demo was the idea of deploying multi-factor authentication, but without unnaturally asking users to carry something around that you have to manage and deal with inventory and deployment. And the demo was just imagine using the smartphone that somebody has. And so here's a case where we think there's this very well-rounded benefit to end users and to IT. In the smartphone case, what I showed was I'm an end user on the Active Directory. When I go to sign in on a PC, it prompts me to use my smartphone. So I take my smartphone out of my pocket, I touch the PC to initiate the sign in, and then Bluetooth tells the smartphone it's time to get a PIN. Mm-hmm. Now, a PIN's a little better than a password, and I would draw the distinction because it's not stored up in the cloud somewhere that an attacker could get to it. It's just on my phone. I enter the PIN, the phone demonstrates that I have physical presence, and then I'm signed into the PC. So in this case, an attacker can't ever get a password by attacking the company, and you would have to literally get my phone and know my PIN both in order to sign in. So we think it's a case where it's both user-friendly and more secure. And that's exactly the balance we're trying to strike and what we build into the platform.
When you look at multi-factor authentication, particularly around in Azure AD, it's a fantastic service. And parts of that are actually completely available today. And it's super easy to go and take advantage of MFA, say, with Office 365. Right now, you can just go and turn it on, in essence. So you can start to understand kind of how these new methods of multi-factor work. And every time I actually explain that you don't have to manage inventory for a little token, people are suddenly realizing, this is easier. This is much, much easier for us to take advantage of. And maybe our end users will actually do it, which is kind of cool. We've also got questions coming in from the live chat. So we'll just have a quick look at those and think about those. But before we go there, what's the kind of the thing that, if you were going to say, we need people to go and do this with Windows 10, I guess it would be join the Insider Program. Is that the main call at the moment?
Yeah, I think right now, our intent right now is really to be having a conversation with customers in general, but really with enterprise IT managers. We're at a point where we think we have the core user experience as you would use it on a PC, in particular, but soon to a tablet. Our touch work is not quite as far along as our mouse and keyboard work. But we want people to try out the user experience. We want people to learn about all these management and security features and be kicking the tires. We want the feedback early in the process. So right now we're focused on enterprise as an audience because it has the most lead time and because people really want to experience the technology. And so the best thing you can do if you think that's you is get on the Insider Program, install the builds, use the feedback tool, engage with us, help us understand the things that are working, the things that are not. We want the data, and we're going to keep making changes. It's the best way to stay up to date on what's happening with Windows 10.
And in terms of the preview program itself, how's it going at the moment? What kind of...
Oh, it's going great. We are well over a million people who have signed up.
Amazing.
We deployed the first build on October 1st, and we've since deployed a second build, which people are in the process of updating to now. We did a blog post that describes some of sort of the install metrics, which is worth reading. A lot of people have hypothesized that the only people installing Windows 10 are putting in VMs, not really using it. That is not true. Mm-hmm. We can see from our telemetry that there's plenty of people using it on real devices as their main OS. And so if you have a PC that you think is appropriate for that, not your main, the main PC that you would be incredibly upset if something happened, we would certainly invite you guys to do that as well. I'm using it on my main PC that I carry around, but then again, I'm part of the team.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to see tweets and responses, stuff coming into the feedback tool, tons of engagement. We're learning a lot about the things that people like, the things that they want optional. Trust us, we're hearing it, and a bunch of that stuff is coming in future builds.
Yeah, it's quite amazing when you actually when you are using the different builds and you're moving through and you're seeing these new features lighting up, and there's obviously there's internal feedback loops as well inside of that first those first couple of
yeah,
rings
exactly.
inside of OSG and inside of the kind of the greater Microsoft IT community before we even touch the insider preview program. And it is kind of interesting when you start to see us kind of just tweaking this bit, that bit, moving it through. I think the thing that we need everybody to know is that the feedback's actually really making a big difference to the way that we're thinking about things. You might not see something light up tomorrow.
Yeah, it is worth mentioning that. And we tried to touch on this in some of the blog posts we've done. As we're hearing from the broad public, there are a lot of things that get to us but then take time to make its way through the build. And as you described, the process that we're using gets those changes to the OS team first, then to a broader population in Microsoft. And we now have a slow circle that you can join as an insider and a fast circle. And obviously, you get the fast circle stuff first, mm-hmm. and then the people on the slow circle will get it a little bit later. Although we're hearing a bunch of stuff, I would have to say be a little bit patient with the rate at which a bunch of these changes come into the builds.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate one of those other points that you made a little bit earlier, which was don't just use it on your main machine. That's kind of asking for a little bit of trouble
yeah.
at this point. We're getting some pretty good stable builds out there, but I've been using it on my main machine for quite a while. I'm very happy. But I just don't feel right saying.
No, actually, I'm glad you brought this up. I wrote about this in a blog post I did, and I think I tweeted about it too. Everyone should realize the builds will probably become less stable than they are now. mm-hmm. And the analogy that I give is we did a bunch of work getting ready for the first technical preview build. We paid a lot of attention. We tried to make sure it was in solid shape. But think of this as a house remodeling project. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be days where the contractors are cutting your floor up and there's sawdust in the air, and it wouldn't be the most comfortable place to live. I expect our insider builds to go through some of that, mm-hmm. which is why we really are saying make sure that you're cautious about what machine you put it on. In spite of the fact that it's very stable and reliable right now, it's likely to get a little more rough as we go along.
It is one of the most exciting things that we are bringing people right inside the process so they get to see these very, very early things. And that should actually make everybody kind of, I guess, a little bit more convinced about how serious we are about getting it right and how serious we are about that feedback really mattering.
Yeah, I think one thing about the point of the process we're now, if you were a skeptical Microsoft watcher, you might say, well, here's this thing out there, but are they going to actually make changes based on things people are saying? And that's why I encourage people to have some patience with that. You know, there's been a lot of feedback on some of the UI things, some UI changes, some stuff that's rough in the build, and it does take us time to go iterate on this stuff, get new stuff in, and then ship it out to all of you. I think the proof will be in the pudding at the end.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a whole lot of that. There's one question that's just come in from Jed on the tweet. I also want to know the answer to this question. Where do we go and get the awesome t-shirt?
Yeah, good news for anybody who's here at TechEd Barcelona. We made a whole bunch of these shirts, and we're going to have them in our Windows booth. Mm-hmm. If you are a Windows insider, then you're eligible to get one of these t-shirts if you're here. So go drop by the booth and try to get yours.
So that guy just there, he can go and get one of those t-shirts from the Windows booth.
If he is a Windows insider,
if he wants to go and get one,
go
if he's
find
a Windows
the
insider.
Booth, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome that we've managed to do that, because last time with the Cortana t-shirts, that just kind of blew up, right? That was a lot of t-shirts and there was nothing out there. It made a really kind of massive impact to have that. It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
to
our
do
design
that.
Team did these. I think they're pretty cool. I don't know if people could see the detail, but
yeah,
it's all ones and zeros. And we have a special prize to anyone who figures out the embedded code. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say.
There is not an embedded code.
Yeah.
Do not spend hours and hours, at least not that I know of.
There's going to be somebody out there that's going to actually take all of that. They're going to convert it. They're going to work with it. They're going to turn it into something.
I did not ask you to do that.
It is just going to happen.
I don't know of any embedded code.
Yeah, this kind of stuff does happen. This is a unique audience that we've got here on Channel 9. It's going to happen that somebody's going to do that. I guess we ought to offer some sort of prize for that. So if you do work out what the code is, tweet it over to me, and I'll work something out. There's going to be something out there for it, but it's always cool. So we've got like 2 minutes left. Any kind of final passing thoughts that you want to let the Nine audience know?
You know, the main thing really, I think, is what we're looking for from people is engagement. And so we've said this before, but I'll say it again. Join the Insider Program. Run the build. Use the feedback tool. Get us feedback and track this as it goes along. If you work in IT in particular, we want to know whether we're on the right track in building an operating system that will make sense for your end users to use on their devices and for you as an IT manager to be able to deploy and improve your security, improve your manageability, make it more cost effective and productive for you to use Windows 10 as your OS.
Cool. So I think that brings us towards the end of the session. We're going to take a break, come back with something in a few moments' time. I'm going to go and get a t-shirt because I need to get a new one for tomorrow, so I might as well do that. Joe, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Very much appreciated.
Good to be here.